Garrett Ilsen here, your celeb expert and your celeb savant. Celeb Savant is a weekly entertainment show. We have long-form career retrospective type interviews with celebrities, singers, actors, and industry experts. On this episode, I'll be speaking to the lead singer of Starship, Mickey Thomas. Starship is an American rock band from San Francisco, California. Initially a continuation of Jefferson Starship, it underwent a change in musical direction that led to a name change. Starship's 1985 album, Knee Deep in the Hoopla, was certified platinum by the RIAA and included two singles that went to number one on the US Billboard Hot 100 charts, We Built the City and Sarah. Their follow-up album, No Protection, released in 1987, was certified gold and featured the band's third number one single, Nothing's Gonna Stop Us Now. After a short hiatus in the early 1990s, the band reformed in 1992 as Starship, featuring Mickey Thomas, and resumed touring. So this is Barrett Edelstein, and I'm the Celeb Savant. Today we've got the brilliant artist, Mr. Mickey Thomas, from the band Starship. So, Mickey, where do we find you in the world? What's happening in your life, and how are you doing?
I'm doing just great. I am in Southern California. That's my part of the world where I live. I live right by Palm Springs, California, in Palm Desert, where it's going to be about 100 degrees today. So that's typical for us, though. And what I'm doing is enjoying life, first of all, and, you know, doing a lot of Starship shows. Mm-hmm. Finally, we're kind of getting back on track, as a lot of the world is after the last 2+ years of the pandemic. I have 3 shows coming up this weekend. 2 in Oklahoma and 1 in Las Vegas.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So when are those shows this weekend? On Friday, Saturday, Sunday?
Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Memorial Day weekend. Friday and Saturday are in casinos in Tulsa and Norman, Oklahoma.
Okay.
And then Sunday over to Las Vegas for a show there.
So let's take it all the way back to the beginning. I know it's many decades. Yeah. How did the Starship journey start?
Well, the Starship journey, I guess if you want to go all the way back to the beginning, you know, it has its roots in the Jefferson Airplane back in the 60s. The Jefferson Airplane begot the Jefferson Starship. And then I joined the Jefferson Starship in 1979 and performed for 5 years as part of Jefferson Starship. And then in 1985, we decided to officially just shorten our name to Starship. You know, we felt that, you know, the band had obviously been through lots of changes by then, from the 60s to the mid 80s. And we just kind of made a conscious effort to kind of shake it up, deconstruct it, and try to reinvent the band stylistically, musically. You know, that was when we started using a lot of modern recording techniques, all the new technology that was available then with sampling and sequencing and computers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so the Starship, shortening it to Starship, was kind of a symbolic move to announced to the world that, hey, you know, we're kind of a, not necessarily a new band, but we're going to be reinventing ourselves moving forward. And you're going to get a whole new sound from Starship.
And that new sound was amazing. I must tell you, whenever I hear the first few beats of We Built That City, I just start dancing.
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, obviously it worked for us. You know, it was a gamble. It was a risk. You know, we knew we were going to lose a lot of the older audience by, you know, taking that risk that we did then. But you know, we hoped that in the process we would attain a whole new audience as well, especially a new radio audience. Because at that point in time, we kind of figured, like, if we're going to survive and not just survive, but to flourish as a band, to move on and to have a career ahead of us, we got to be more radio friendly. We're going to have some radio presence and some hit singles. So that was the gamble with Knee Deep in the Hoopla. And as you said, it paid off with We Built the City and Sarah, back-to-back number one singles.
Now, did you lose some fans?
Yeah, I think so. Probably. You know, I don't know if we lost them. we still get, I mean, the Starship audience now, you know, when I look in the audience, it transcends generations, yeah. You know, we got like three generations of fans out in the audience, you know, grandmas, moms, daughters. So I think some of them were maybe not, some of the older fans are maybe not totally happy with the new sound, but I think that maybe we kind of, because, you know, biggest reason is because when we perform, I mean, they're still going to hear, you know, Jane and Find Your Way Back and yeah. songs from the late 70s, early 80s. They're going to hear, you know, we do a tribute to the earlier incarnations of the band where my female vocalist and myself, we do White Rabbit, Somebody to Love, Miracles, Count on Me. So, you know, they get a taste of the entire musical spectrum of the band, the whole history of the band.
And like it should be.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, why not? Yeah.
Where did the name Starship, I know it was Jefferson Starship, but where did Starship come from?
Yeah, it was just a shortening. The Jefferson Starship, just dropping the Jefferson and going with simply Starship. We want to take it back a little further. You know, Jefferson Starship was an offshoot of Jefferson Airplane.
Yeah.
Which I think at that point in time, you know, changing the name to Starship as opposed to Airplane was just, again, kind of a symbolic thing of like, hey, we're, you know, the airplane is an old antiquated yep. propeller thing, you know, and now we're going into outer space, yeah. so to speak. So we are a Starship now. Now, if you were to ask me how the original Jefferson Airplane name came about, well, that's a different story. I don't think anyone really has the true answer for that okay. one. As near as I can tell, Jorma Kalkinen, who was the original guitarist in Jefferson Airplane, was a huge blues aficionado, loved blues music. And one of his favorite blues artists was an artist named Blind Lemon Jefferson.
Okay.
So I think that's where the Jefferson part of it came from. And how they attached the Jefferson to the airplane, no one's really sure, but I think there was probably a lot of drugs involved.
As they normally say, it does happen like that.
Yeah.
What's your favorite part about getting up on stage and performing?
The energy from the audience, you know, I think that's what motivates me and moves me and wants me to continue to keep on doing this. But just the, you know, the pleasure you get from seeing the energy come back from the audience, you know, you feel that, you know, being on stage as an entertainer, it's a definitely a give and take thing. You know, we get as much back from them as hopefully we're giving them. And so that motivates me, you know, the fact that, I sometimes think I enjoy it more now than I ever have at any point in my career. There's less pressure now than okay. there was maybe in the 80s, you know, when you have these massive, you know, 6 month long tours with, you know, 50, 60 people on the road and you're gone, you're away from home for 5-6 months straight. And now, you know, we just kind of, we're more like weekend warriors now. You know, we go out like, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and we come home for a few days, you yeah. know, and rest up and go back out again. And so there's just not the pressure there was with the long, you know, monumental tours of the 80s. So I really enjoy that part of it. I'm more the master of my own destiny now. I think, you know, I can kind of pick and choose to some extent, you know, when I want to go out and where, and I can be more selective. And so that just makes the whole process a lot more fun.
You spoke about the audience giving and taking, and I'm always that yeah. person standing right up in front in concerts. And I see everyone yeah. around me with their cell phones up trying to get the perfect yeah. photo or perfect video. And yeah. don't you find that a little bit more taking than giving from the audience perspective?
Yeah, to the extent what bothers me most about the cell phones is that everybody in the audience has got a movie camera yeah. and everybody's filming your performance. And sure enough, it's going to be posted all over the place come next Monday morning or whenever. And the fact that we have no quality control over that whatsoever is kind of tough, you know, because you're at the mercy of the elements quite often, you know. If you're at the front of the stage and somebody's, as you said, right there in the front row with a phone, you know, well, they're not going to get the whole sound, you know, they're not exactly. going to get the whole picture. God knows what the sound system might be like on any given night. There might be technical problems, you know, the bass amp might blow up or something. So just that lack of quality control yeah. over what gets put out there on the internet is kind of frustrating.
But for me, it's more than that because you are right in front of them. And yet they're trying to see you through a same size as the screen on the television. And they're missing yeah. the whole experience. That's what I find. So I'm just there yeah. dancing, having a fun time. And I watch all these people going mad around me. And I really find that they're missing the essence of the whole experience.
I agree. You know, I remember my generation, you know, in the 80s when I had my first child and you know, your video cameras were all, you know, we were downsizing and they were all just so easy to use and everything. And I remember, you know, you become obsessed with it, with your kid, you know, and I remember thinking like, I have this bloody camera up in front of my face the whole time my kid is growing up, you know, and I'm missing it because my eye is plastered here. Yeah. And so you miss the process because you're too busy trying to record it than just enjoy it as it's going down, you know, and it's kind of similar what you're saying. You know, you're missing the concert because you're trying to capture your own little version of that posterity have to keep with you, but you've missed the actual event, the live event.
And what's interesting is that back in those days, we had cameras, but you weren't allowed to take cameras into concerts. I remember that specifically. They always used to check. And then with cell phones, they couldn't control that anymore.
We didn't see that one coming, you know. Well, nobody ever saw the day that every member of the audience would have their own movie camera. You know?
Except me.
And, you know, I guess we could be like we could be like the PGA and just not allow people to bring their phones onto the golf course or something. You know? And, you know, then that opens a whole other can of worms, may not want to get into.
Music is listened to now differently compared to when it was, you know, the 70s, 80s. It was vinyl, cassettes, CDs. Yeah. Now we've got all these digital platforms. What is your thoughts of the way that people now consume music?
Well, it's certainly a far cry from, the world that I grew up in, you know. I mean, part of the process of buying albums back in the day for me was just going into the record store and spending hours just checking out all the album covers, you know, looking at the artwork and checking out the credits and just, you know, that, you know, that's part of the process has certainly been lost. I don't know. You know, again, I mean, it is what it is. I mean, what are you going to do? That's the way music gets transmitted now, you know, from the artist to the consumer. And although it is kind of nice that vinyl has made a comeback. Yeah. And even among younger kids, they love vinyl, you know. So maybe, I mean, it's never going to swing back completely to that. And I think because of the process of how music is delivered these days, it's more immediate, has much shorter shelf life, I think, you know. The hits are not going to have some of the staying power that songs did before. Maybe I'm wrong about that. But especially with bands, it seems like bands have a real short shelf life now, new bands. And I love a lot of new bands and new music, you know, mostly the bands. But it's kind of like, you know, a new band comes along, there's one big album, maybe two, and then you don't hear from them again. Yeah. They're kind of gone, you know. So I don't know if a lot of the music today is going to have the staying power that some of the music in the past did. You know, I don't know how much of today's music we'll be listening to 50 years from now. I'm sure some of it. Yeah. I mean, you know, we're going to have, there's always exceptions to the rule, of course, right? Yeah. If you're, it's kind of like you're either, there are mega stars and then there are guys down at the bottom just struggling to be heard. And there's not much in between.
Completely understand. So just from my perspective, I love buying the CDs. I still buy my CDs. I buy the booklets, the whole aesthetic of holding something. And not only vinyls are coming back, but cassettes and CDs are coming back as well. In fact, last year, CD sales increased for the first time in 21 years. Did you know that?
I didn't know that. I'm glad to hear that, though.
So it was based off Adele, ABBA, and Ed Sheeran. They helped propel CDs back up.
Good. Well, you know, I like it when artists are kind of pushing that along, you know, helping that process. AC/DC, I love them because, you know, it's just recently changed. But, you know, for a long, long time, just up until a few years back, you could only get AC/DC songs if you buy a hard copy, you know. Yep. You're not going to get AC/DC off of iTunes or anything like that. And I think they finally relented, like so many. But I like that when, you know, you kind of stick to your guns and say, hey, this is how we do it. If you want to hear our music, you got to go buy this CD. Hopefully you have a car that still has a CD player in it.
What's interesting for me is that, so, you know, I've got my Spotify account and I've created my playlists because I teach spinning classes. Every now and then I go back into a playlist and a song has been deleted or removed. Whereas if you've got the CD, it's always yours. It's always tangible. There's an energy exchange between yourself and the artist for owning that music.
Yes. They can't take that away from you.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. And I also find that the digital platforms have diminished the worth of music to a certain degree because you're paying for millions of songs. Whereas before, you'd pay for 15 songs and it was something special, you know? It wasn't just like...
I mean, when you bought an album, it was meant to be... I wouldn't say not every album was a concept album, but every song is meant to be taken in context of that album that it's part of, you know? And sequencing was always a big deal to me. How you sequence the song so it kind of tells a better story and flows into it. One song flows into another correctly, and certainly don't have that anymore.
No. Which artists were you listening to in the 80s?
Oh, in the 80s? My favorites were, I love Peter Gabriel. You know, he's one of my all-time favorites. I listen to Gabriel a lot. I listen to David Bowie a lot. You know, every now and then I would always have to go back and get my Beatles fix, you know, because that's what I cut my teeth on, was the Beatles. I never get tired of that. And, you know, a lot of newer music, you know, I like Tears for Fears. I loved a lot. God, it was so, you know, 80s music was so fabulous. You know, it was just like, you know, I tell people that was like, now, I look at the charts now. And I, first of all, I don't know most of the artists that I'm looking at in the top 100, but it's all pretty much the same kind of music as far as, the hot 100 or whatever. But, and then you break it down, you know, everything is categorized. Like then you got country, adult, contemporary, you know, adult rock, modern rock, this rock, that gospel, whatever. And, but in the 80s, you get all of that on one chart, man. 1985, you go look at the top 20, and you may get Whitney Houston, Def Leppard, Tears for Fears, Thompson Twins, Starship, Whitesnake.
Yeah.
You know, everything was there. Everybody's welcome to the club, and everybody listened to all the music, all different kinds of music on the radio. That was really cool.
It's interesting because I follow the music charts and you're referencing specifically the Billboard charts. But I've noticed in the UK, there's a little bit more diversity in the type of music on the charts. Yeah. I'm not sure, like in the US, it's just a certain type of music, which is the majority of the charts. And then a little bit of the rest. I think you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I think the UK and probably other countries, they've always been more diverse, I think. More open, you know, to hearing, you know, different kinds of music on the same station. You know, here, I mean, because we get that pounded into us here in the U.S. There's just so much stimulus and so much information and so much controlling the way that you're supposed to think and look and see and feel. You know, this is what you got to like this week. Next week, maybe something else. But, you know, I think we're more controlled by the media in this country than maybe a lot of other places. It's just so humongous.
I think every country has it to a certain degree.
Yeah. Russia certainly has it.
Yeah. And maybe China and Hong Kong.
And you know, and to some extent, this country, we're getting more, it's kind of frightening, you know, what's happened here in the last about 4 or 5 years, just of how much propaganda there is out there and how much people believe propaganda. And it's kind of scary. We kind of have like a 50-50 country now, where half the country kind of believes facts and about half the country just kind of makes up their own facts.
Yeah.
And that's what they believe. And you can't change their mind either.
Well, I suppose the thing is that makes a democracy, you know, work as long as everyone's living in harmony.
As long as you don't try to destroy the democracy itself.
Yeah, I know exactly who you're talking about.
Right. Exactly. As long as you still have that as a system, it will work, you know. Yeah.
And the current artists that you're listening to, the bands that are inspiring you?
Oh, gosh. Let's see. What am I listening to these days? I'm back into Arcade Fire because they're back out on the road again now. So I've rekindled my Arcade Fire spark. I love them. Tears for Fears is on the road again. I'm thinking I might go catch them this summer somewhere. And new bands. Oh, gosh. Who comes to mind?
I know you said they only have two albums and then disappear. So can you remember any of them?
Some of them are sticking around. I still listen to Radiohead a lot. You know, they still have a very devoted following and they've been able to. But again, you're never going to find them on the radio these days. You know, it's like they have this solid base of fans that are going to buy their records when they come out. Records, there I go again, calling them records. But yeah, so, you know, I still listen to them. I'm excited to hear. I'm always interested in anything that Muse may come out with. I like Muse a lot. just, you know, I'm open. All kinds of stuff.
So more of the alternative indie rock kind of stuff.
I think so, yeah, for me, because that's just, because it's just fresh, you know. It's something I haven't maybe heard before.
Okay.
Or heard a thousand times before.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
So I like that, yeah.
What is your experience of South Africa? Have you been yet, toured yet?
I have never been to South Africa. I've never been to Africa, period.
Oh, wow.
And that's number one on my list of you know, places that I want to go. My wife and I have talked for years about a trip to Africa, safari.
I knew you were going to say that.
You know, no guns. But, you know, that would be great. And we were actually had some definite plans in the works right before COVID hit us all.
Okay.
You know, so we got to get back to work on that and definitely plan an Africa trip.
Perfect. So when you get here, I'll be there in the show and we'll go for coffee afterwards. How does that sound?
Let's do that. You know, let's start off with a concert.
Yes.
You know, in South Africa somewhere. And and then we'll just segue from there, you know, up the east coast of Africa to a safari somewhere.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful.
Go and commune with the gorillas and stuff.
Oh, no, that's in Rwanda, not in South Africa.
Right, yeah, that's in the middle, right?
Yeah. Are you writing any new music? Is there any new music coming from Starship?
We are not currently writing any new music. I'm in the process of writing a song with a friend of mine. A friend of mine has a movie that he did the screenplay for that there's going to start shooting in just a month or so, I think, in Italy. So he wants me to write a song with him for the movie. It's called Global Harmony. So we were trying to come up with a song that would be kind of in the vein of like Imagine by John Lennon or something. That kind of, you know, universally inspirational song, which, you know, biting off a lot there, but we'll see what we can do.
I know. We were speaking in the office earlier, and it's amazing how every sort of culture, religion, or type of group discriminates against another type of group. So even within, like, for example, the white Christian men back in the day, Catholics versus Protestants. You know, it's always these differences. And you'd think by now, after all these years, that we'd be able to see the similarity and honor it within each other. It's just ridiculous.
Well, it is ridiculous. And you know, we should be able to do it. I don't know why. I certainly don't have an answer for why we don't, because we've certainly had enough lessons over the several thousand years, you know, to kind of figure that out. Like, it doesn't do us any good to kill each other or, you know, wars and stuff like war should be totally obsolete right now in this day and age. But unfortunately, it's not. But that's the goal, I think, is to make war obsolete to where it's just not a viable option anymore. And it's kind of, you know, we're hopefully there'll be some lessons learned as to what's happening in Ukraine, that maybe war is not the answer.
It's unfortunate that certain people with egos think that they know better, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's ego, mostly male ego, you know. A long time ago, again, I remember, I really believe that women should just be running the world. That I firmly believe that. And I base that, when I really saw that, I mentioned, you know, my daughter a minute ago and the movie cameras and all that. But I remember her, I think it was her third birthday party. And it was a kind of an even mixture of little boys and little girls, mm-hmm. 3-year-olds. And the little girls had a little tea table set up in the backyard. And they had, you know, they had this big clown, you know, that with the weighted bottom, you know, knock over and he's back up. So the girls had the clown seated at their little tea table in a little chair, and they're making tea and they're serving the little clown tea and they're pretending him to drink. And all of a sudden, I'm watching this go down, and all of a sudden, 3 or 4 little boys just come running by, grab the clown, and just start punching him, falling down on the ground, and run away. And I'm like, that's why women should be running the world. Right there.
Yeah.
I got it.
Absolutely. But then men see their way as being too weak and too vulnerable and won't get the work job done.
Yeah, I don't see them that way.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
So, Mickey, I'm going to put you on the spot now. Your 5 favorite songs by other artists. First 5 that come to your mind. What are the songs and who are the artists?
Well, Hey Jude, Beatles.
Okay.
Probably Gimme Shelter, The Stones. Life on Mars, David Bowie.
Okay.
I guess I better get a Peter Gabriel in here since he's one of my favorites. Digging in the Dirt, Peter Gabriel. I love that one. And let's see, one more. Let's go something like crazy, like maybe Heartbreak Hotel, Elvis. I'm really excited about the new Elvis movie.
It's looking good. It's coming out in a couple of weeks.
Not because it's an Elvis movie so much as because it's a Baz Luhrmann movie. And I love Baz Luhrmann. Okay. And it's going to be great to see what he does with the whole Elvis thing. You know, it's going to be very interesting.
I think it comes out in a month or in June or July.
June, I think.
Mickey, our podcast as listened to around the world, obviously in South Africa. As a final message to the listening audience, what would you like to say to them?
To the audience?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Well, I would like to say thank you, first of all, you know, for giving me the opportunity to still be doing what I'm doing, you know, at this stage of my life. I'm very grateful. I'm very thankful. And I'm just so glad that there are people out there who still want to come and see Starship, still want to come and see me sing. And I want to do it for as long as I possibly can. You know, sometimes people say, well, when are you going to retire? I said, when I can't do it anymore.
Yeah.
And I can still do it. So no end in sight. But thank you. Thank you to the fans. And I look forward to seeing each and every one of you, I hope, before my time is done here.
So each and every one of them without their cell phones in front of their faces.
Yeah, let me see your face. Let me phone. Exactly.
Mickey, thank you so much for your time today. It's been an honor speaking to you. This is Barrett the Celeb Savant signing out.
All right. Thank you.